Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the December 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR, vintage radios and old-time radio shows. Inventory on shopgoodwill.com changes regularly, so be sure to check back often. If there is a radio you're interested in, make a note to check back as the auction progresses. No need to make a bid right away. As you get closer to the cutoff date, the bidding will quickly escalate. Since many bids end late into the evening East Coast time, bidders on the West Coast may have a better chance for the winning bid. Old-time radio plays again. In this electronic age, if you're interested in the vintage radio shows that used to be heard on the air daily throughout the first five decades of U.S. broadcasting history, look no further than archive.org/details/old-time-radio. These programs have been collected by the thousands. Even if you listen 24/7, it could take decades to listen to only a percentage. The main page gives you a glimpse of the hundreds of titles, many with hundreds more episodes, most in nearly broadcast quality audio. Series that you may have never heard of are found here. For example, I found a half-hour series in 16 episodes from March 1956 to July 1956 called Camel Rock and Roll Party, sponsored by Camel Cigarettes. It was one of the first rock and roll shows transcribed from live performances, originally broadcast on WCBS AM and FM, New York City. The station ID makes it onto several of these recordings and across the CBS radio network. The series was rebroadcast on the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, AFRTS. The show was hosted by none other than Alan Freed, billed as the King of Rock and Roll, and featured the Count Basie Orchestra backing up many up-and-coming recording artists of the day, as well as those who were household names even in that day: Tony Bennett, Frankie Lyman, Etta James, Della Reese, Clyde McFatter, and dozens more. Alan Freed sparked controversy in some U.S. cities by offering a mixed-race lineup of live popular music acts. Playing these old-time radio shows couldn't be simpler. When you click on the icon for the name of the show, a list of the programs related to the show comes up. Clicking on any program in the list starts the program. You can skip to any part of the program with your cursor. The list of shows is mind-boggling. 8,841 when I checked in mid-November. Each show can have dozens more shows depending on how long the show was in production and how many episodes were made each year. Some shows were only 15 minutes, some 30 minutes, and some hour-long shows. Almost all were sponsored, and in many cases the commercials are left in the show. Here's just a partial list of shows. Jack Benny's show, variety, comedy. Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, crime drama. Suspense, drama. Fibber, McGee and Molly, sitcom. The Great Gildersleeve, sitcom. Broadway Is My Beat, crime drama. Lux Radio Theater, drama. This Is Your FBI, crime drama. Gunsmoke, western drama. Nick Carter, master detective, crime drama. Lum and Abner, sitcom. The Lone Ranger, western drama. Mr. District Attorney, crime drama. Pat Novak for Hire, crime drama. Perry Mason, legal drama. Have Gun Will Travel, western drama. The Adventures of Sam Spade, crime drama. Bob and Ray, The Complete Collection, offbeat humor. Orson Welles, Mercury Theater, 1938. And hundreds more. The list practically goes on forever. There are quite a few BBC and CBC radio productions, as well as some from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. There are some vintage video shows, too, that many will find entertaining, including Tops of the Pops from the 1960s, featuring many groups just starting out that became big stars. Real old-time radio on the air tonight. At least one radio station brings back the sounds of yesteryear. CFZM 740 kHz from Toronto, Canada, known on the air as Zoomer Radio, originally for Boomers with a Zest for Life. The 50 kilowatt transmitter puts out a non-directional signal that covers a great portion of the Northeast U.S. as well as Eastern Canada. In the evenings, the station plays a lot of vintage music, the British Invasion, and old-time radio programs, as well as music-related documentaries. Celebrity Spotlight with Larry Jackson, Saturday Night Bandstand, and the All-Night Jukebox. Weeknights include various OTR radio shows on Theater of the Mind. This station has one of the most varied program schedules on the AM band. Out of range from CFZM, you can also stream the station directly on their website or through your Wi-Fi radio or the MyTuner app. Just search for CFZM. And now a feature article, The Channel Master Story by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR. Joseph Y. Resnick was born in Ellenville, New York in 1924. His school career was less than stellar. In 1942, he dropped out of high school in the middle of his senior year, left the small town for New York City, and enrolled in a course in radio fundamentals. At the start of World War II, he joined the U.S. Merchant Marine as a radio operator, making the run between the U.S. and Europe until his discharge in 1944. After the war, at the age of 21, his radio background helped him land a job as a junior engineer for Dumont Laboratories, a pioneering TV company founded in 1931 by Alan B. Dumont in Upper Montclair, New Jersey. Among the stations Dumont started was experimental station W2XVT in Passaic, New Jersey, which would eventually become WABD-TV, using Dumont's initials, in New York City, the third commercial TV station in New York City, and the fifth overall in the U.S., according to FCC history cards. Today, the station is WNYW, sister station of WWOR-TV. Dumont not only started TV stations, but his company also built and sold TV sets as well as TV antennas, installing them in the tri-state New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. By the time Resnick was 23, he was making $32 per week working for Dumont. Part of his job was installing Dumont antennas, and it was here that he decided to start his own antenna manufacturing company. According to an article in the February 1954 issue of Popular Science magazine, his first antenna was based on designs he found in the Radio Amateur's Handbook. His first venture, Oak Ridge Antenna Company, was not a success. Backers of the company wanted to lean more toward installing and servicing TV sets. Resnick had a better idea: build a better pre-assembled TV antenna, one that would not necessarily need professional installation, and one that would cut the time of installation for professionals down to 90 seconds. So he left the company. But to chase this dream, he would need working capital. So in 1949, he went to his brothers, Lou and Harry, and another local businessman, borrowing nearly $10,000, the equivalent to over $130,000 in today's currency, to start the new company, which he called Channel Master. Joe Resnick was 25 years old. By the time Resnick was 29 years old, he was chairman of the board of Channel Master, a company doing $12 million in antenna sales, annually shipping 2.5 million pre-assembled antennas. The company in Ellenville would eventually employ about 1,000 people in two plants, which included a laboratory staffed by 26 electronic engineers and technicians working three shifts. By 1955, Joe and his brothers were millionaires. The production of Channel Master antennas was quite impressive. According to the Popular Science article, in their first year, they used 30,000 pounds of aluminum. By 1953, they were using 400,000 pounds of aluminum. The company's ultimate TV antenna, a VHF tripod dubbed the Champion, was designed by Dr. Yuen T. Lo, whose doctoral thesis was on the subject of TV antennas. Civic-minded, as well as a savvy businessman, Joe Resnick tried his hand at electoral politics. He was first elected to the local school board, quite a trick for a high school dropout. After that, Resnick was encouraged to run for the U.S. House of Representatives, which he did in 1964, narrowly defeating his opponent, a seven-term incumbent. Joe Resnick served his district for two terms, from January 1965 to January 1969. While still a sitting representative, he sought the nomination to run for the Senate, but finished third in a three-way primary race in the spring of 1968. After his House term ran out in January 1969, Resnick returned to the business world and, on a business trip to Las Vegas in October 1969, he died from an apparent heart attack. At the time, he was married and had four children, ages 10 to 20 years old. Resnick's was a life of amazing accomplishments packed into just 44 years. The Channel Master Legacy. Throughout the 1950s and 60s, Channel Master rode the wave of the electronic revolution, epitomized by transistor radios and other new product innovations. The company offered an extensive catalog of items from tabletop radios to pocket AM radios to TV sets, record players, and component stereo systems, importing high-quality Channel Master-branded devices made by Japanese electronics companies, which were at that time in ascendancy. Throughout the 1970s and 80s, the company forged ahead, following every electronic trend that gripped a nation in love with electronic trends. While the company continued to manufacture a complete line of VHF-UHF antennas, Channel Master also became a significant player in the production and sale of 8-track cartridge players, CB radio sets, even home satellite TV systems. Change was in the air at Channel Master, while its founder and driving force was serving in the U.S. House of Representatives. In October of 1967, Channel Master was acquired by the Avnet Company, also a maker of TV antennas and accessories, moving Channel Master's manufacturing to a former Sylvania TV factory in North Carolina. Avnet would eventually sell the company in 1998. The company struggled through various merger and acquisition deals, filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in October 2003. Channel Master's equipment, inventory, and intellectual property had been acquired by the Andrew Corporation, founded in Chicago in 1937 by Victor J. Andrew. The company originally specialized in manufacturing high-quality radio antennas and made hardware for communications networks, including coaxial cables, and eventually satellite dishes for commercial and residential use. In 2012, a group of private investors acquired the Channel Master brand and TV antenna business, moving the company's operations to Chandler, Arizona, where it continues in business today, riding the current wave of cord cutting with the sale of over-the-air TV antennas and accessories at channelmaster.com. And now, Amateur Radio Satellites by Keith Baker, KB1SF, VA3KSF, KB1SF at yahoo.com. New Amateur Satellites. In previous installments of this column, I've been highlighting the many ways one can get in on the fun of operating on our fleet of amateur radio satellites. But, as I also noted then, because of the very harsh environment of space where they must operate, all Earth-orbiting satellites, not just our own fleet of amateur radio satellites, launched into space have a very definite lifetime. And unfortunately, that finite lifetime issue is one of the reasons why there's been a growing dearth of amateur radio satellites in orbit, with only a handful of analog satellites still operational. And even those aren't currently operating at 100% of their designed capabilities. But fortunately, there is a brand new amateur satellite with an analog transponder that has just been launched, and, as of this writing, had recently completed its initial checkout on orbit and has since been opened for general amateur radio operation. What's more, there are a few more satellites in various stages of construction and/or checkout that are awaiting launch at the moment. So, in this edition of the column, I'll first shine the spotlight onto that new satellite. I'll then bring you up to date on the current construction and launch status of two others that are now awaiting launch. MESAT-1 MO-122. MESAT-1 is a 3U CubeSat that's been assembled at the University of Maine, UMaine. It is also the first satellite of its kind ever to be built in Maine. MESAT-1 carries three imaging experiments proposed by Maine schools, along with a two-way amateur radio transponder for use by ground control commanding and for amateur radio communications. In 2018, the Maine Space Grant Consortium kicked off a pilot CubeSat Launch Initiative, CSLI, to involve students and teachers from across the state in designing a CubeSat mission. Through a competitive process, the consortium selected three experiments to propose for NASA's 2019 ELENA, Educational Launch of Nanosatellites, opportunity. NASA accepted the MESAT-1 proposal early in 2020, and the satellite was eventually paired with launch provider Firefly Aerospace for ELENA Mission 43. MESAT-1 was originally projected to launch from Vandenberg Space Force Base, California, in June of 2022, but the launch was delayed. The satellite was finally and successfully launched into space early on the morning of July 4th, carried aloft by a Firefly Aerospace Alpha rocket. It was also successfully released into a sun-synchronous polar orbit about 510 kilometers, 317 miles, above Earth. The main radio aboard MESAT-1 is a linear transponder module built by AMSAT North America, AMSAT-NA, who partnered with UMaine on the project. As with most other satellites, a ground station operator will command the satellite through the transponder, and that transponder will also be used to transmit telemetry back to Earth. Plus, that transponder was designed to be made available to amateur radio operators for two-way communication. MESAT-1's analog transponder features an uplink on 145.91 to 145.94, with a downlink on 435.81 to 435.84 megahertz, mode VU, the old mode J. Telemetry will be downlinked on 435.8 megahertz at 1200 baud BPSK. Several experiments are also being carried aboard the satellite, including a reflected light albedo experiment, along with an onboard camera experiment that will be used to assist in gathering data for the two other onboard experiments. As I noted, as of this writing, MESAT-1 has since been successfully checked out on orbit, and so far seems to be working well. As a result, the amateur radio transponder has now been opened for normal amateur use. In addition, MESAT-1's University of Maine's builders asked AMSAT that an OSCAR number be assigned. That request has since been granted by AMSAT, and MESAT-1 can now also be called MESAT Oscar 122, or just MO122. Hades R. The latest Hades, Hades D satellite, was designed and built jointly by AMSAT Spain, AMSAT EA, along with Hydra Space Systems, and is being operated by AMSAT EA. The satellite uses a pocket cube form factor that makes it a tiny 1.5P nanosatellite, 5x5x7.5 cm. It carries an FM repeater using the call sign AM6SAT. Launched on November 11, 2023, on a SpaceX Falcon 9 launch vehicle, the satellite was later designated Spain Oscar 121, or just SO-121. Hades R will use essentially the same space hardware as SO-121, except it will use a higher power battery to provide 0.25 watts of downlink power with a full charge. The main mission for Hades R is to be yet another FM crossband repeater. The satellite will also carry an experiment by Smart IR, Graphene Engineering Innovation Center, GEIC, at the University of Manchester, UK, consisting of a very low-power active radiator test of electronic components in the harsh thermal conciliations of space. The data for this experiment will be transmitted in a specific data packet in the downlinked telemetry. This experiment has already been delivered to AMSAT EA for integration and will be operated by AMSAT EA once the satellite is launched. All the downlink data from this experiment will be freely available and in the public domain. Hades R will again offer licensed radio amateurs around the world the opportunity to relay FM voice, AX25 data, and or APRS 300-1200 BPS communications through its VHF uplink and UHF downlink transponder. Again, mode VU, the old mode J. The satellite will also transmit telemetry via voice and CW messages. All of this will be achieved by implementing an SDR-based FM and FSK transponder on the crossband repeater. The FM AFSK repeater will be available full-time, but will be controlled by a received uplink signal breaking a squelch setting. This eliminates the need for users to also send a subtone to open up the satellite's receiver. As of this writing, early November 2024, the launch of Hades R was slated for late November aboard the Alba Orbital 8th flight on a SpaceX launch vehicle. And if all goes or went as planned, the satellite may already be in orbit and undergoing checkout as you read this. 10CO2. During my visit to the Tokyo Ham Fair in late August, and as a past president of AMSAT-NA, I once again had the opportunity to meet my fellow amateur satellite compatriots from JAMSAT, the Japanese AMSAT group, at their Tokyo Ham Fair booth. Besides once again being warmly welcomed by their group, I soon discovered that they too are now working on yet another amateur radio satellite project called 10CO2. In partnership with JAMSAT, a team from the Okuyama Laboratory at Nihon University in Japan has been developing and building the microsatellite. It's being touted as the successor to the original 10CO satellite that was developed by the Okuyama Laboratory at the Kyushu Institute of Technology in Japan back in 2018. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.